Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Wind Tucson. It's not getting any warmer out there, Matt.
Couple more days.
Okay, someone took my heat away. I am so excited about today's show. Everyone that's a guest today on the show is named Gina. So I don't know how that happened, but it did, and I didn't realize it till I told my producer who my guests were going to be today. So I have lots of good friends named Gina, but the first Gina that we're going to feature on our show is a woman I've known for quite some time. I think we're almost coming up on 10 years, and she does amazing work. And she has an organization called Soul Survivor, Inc. It has to do with helping people heal, and I'll let her explain how that works. But Gina Jernukian, please welcome to Wind Tucson, and thank you for accepting my invitation this morning to be on the show.
Well, hello, Kathleen. Thank you for having me. And yes, burr.
I know, right?
Cold here.
We are so spoiled. And I lived in cold places. I lived in Chicago where they have wind chill factor below zero into the 80s. And so I'm just really being a wuss, but it's okay. Hey, it is still Human Trafficking Awareness Month. We're about 6 days left, and there's a lot of activity, and obviously the Super Bowl is coming. Everyone's heard of that. But a lot of the work that happens around this comes from all different factions, and it doesn't just go around the Super Bowl, and it doesn't just stop after January. We have Awareness Month. It happens the 11 other months of the year. And it's important that people know that when we're not talking about this, there's still a need. There's still a desire to help people, and there's still issues with people that are suffering from trauma. And would you share with my listeners what it is that you specifically do? Because I think it's something that people don't even think about. And the focus that you've taken. So please explain to my listeners what it is that you do and about your organization.
Well, I'll tell you, over a decade ago, I didn't know this was a thing. I didn't know it was real. And long story short, I'm a permanent makeup artist. And the spa salon owner said, "Hey, Gina, you know, there's this new process of removing tattoos. You know, come check it out." And I was like, "Okay, you know, another stream of income. Sure, why not?" Anyways, I thought it would be something good. So I flew off to Las Vegas. It was one of the very first companies that did it this way. It's not laser. And I thought, okay, cool. So I start removing tattoos, and it wasn't before too long, I start seeing just these odd tattoos and some aggressive, you know, Neanderthal men in my studio, and I start questioning, what is this? So I'd asked a friend, and actually that's when I had met you, and learned that they were brandings. And I was like, what? These women get branded? You know, these victims get branded? So I, you know, immediately just start calling organizations in the area and said, "Hey, I offer this, send them in for free, and let's help them out. Let's remove this branding." And before I knew it, within less than a year, people were driving 3 hours, flying in. I was so overwhelmed with doing all of these procedures. I ended up forming a nonprofit. Well, and now we are in, we're in 56 cities. But that's what we do. We remove or cover the brandings and scars from these survivors. It's often these, you know, these markings of slavery is often left behind when they escape.
Well, and to your point, the predators, the Johns, the people that sell the people who marked them, it's a scar, and every day, even if they're out of the life, it's a reminder of the trauma, of the rape, of the sexual assault, everything that they've been through. And so by removing that and taking it away, it takes away that connection to it. Not that they don't have that trauma, not that they didn't go through that, but it's that reminder is taken away. And I think the other thing that's really important, and sometimes you cover it up, sometimes you'll take what's there and you'll turn it into something beautiful, which I think is really wonderful. But what is because that's great and that's a process, but what do you see happening to these men and women when you do change or get rid of this tattoo? What's the reaction from them?
You know, it's actually beautiful. I was with a young lady yesterday, and so in my studio here in Phoenix, of course we're across the country, but my studio here in Phoenix, I have something called the Freedom Wall, and it's a big wall, and it's their handprint. So after we, you know, start the process, because it is a process, it isn't just a one-time thing, unless it's a, you know, tattoo cover-up, and they put their handprints on this wall, and you can just see in their face, they're just relieved. Because after they escape, no matter, you know, how that happens, they either go through a program or they're in a safe home and they get medical, they get counseling, they often get schooling, they get clothing, they get childcare if they need it, they get food, they get all these necessities, but yet every day they still have to see this marking on their skin. So sometimes it isn't right away. It isn't like the month they escape. It can be year or years later where they come see us. And it's almost like that missing piece, that last part of some of that healing. I mean, we know this is a lifetime of healing, but it is just the look on their face. They always let me take a picture, which is so sweet. And I usually take side view, so it's not their face. And it's just like this, it's this sigh. It's this like joyful sigh. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
Well, you're essentially giving them freedom because the branding is a marking. The branding makes them be chattel, takes away their dignity, takes away their humanity. And so I think by removing that, you're giving them back grace and healing and love.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's such a wonderful, wonderful gift that you can give somebody. So,
yeah, and it's something they have to explain. You know, what is that from? Where'd you get that tattoo? You know, they don't want to have to even acknowledge. And again, it's not always tattoos. The majority of them are tattoos, but they're not always tattoos.
Correct. And, how many do you have? I mean, not that you keep score, but do you have a record of how many? Do you know how many survivors you've helped at this point?
I know how many procedures we do, and so I'd have to look at the amount of survivors. But we average about 1,000 procedures a year.
And is that at each location or across all the locations?
No, across the locations. And growing. You know, we're growing, so that number will pick up. It's like a bittersweet thing. It's like, oh, thank goodness people are understanding and knowing who we are so we can help them. But how sad that there are so many that need this.
Absolutely.
How sad.
And that it was done to demean and to make somebody a possession of somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Gina, we have to take a short break, but when we come back, I remember a story you shared with me about a veteran, and I want to talk about that because it's a whole different group of people that are healing. We're talking to Gina Jernukian of Soul Survivor, Inc. We will be back right after this. This is Kathleen Wynn with Wynn Tucson, and you're listening to 1030 AM, The Voice. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. I'm your host, Kathleen Wynn, and my special guest today is Gina Jernukian. Gina, you also did something unique. So sometimes people can't come to you, and you go to them, and you go to them in prisons. I know that you did that for a long time. I don't know if COVID probably messed that up. COVID messed up a lot of things. but what was that ministry and what caused you to do that?
Oh, well, that was an incredible ministry. And actually, I just spoke with Sheriff Lamb a couple weeks ago, and they're going to get us back in. Also, Douglas Prison, and then there's another one in, oh my gosh, Arizona State Prison.
Yes.
So there's three now. And that is amazing. And to be honest, I forgot how we even, it was a client of mine that I was removing her tattoo. Her boyfriend was a deputy. And she's like, whoa, I mean, this is really cool. Let me talk to, you know, them and get with Sheriff Lamb to see if we can make this happen. And it was a little bit of a process, about a 3-month process. But we were going into Pinal County Jail twice a month.
Correct.
And I got to be honest, when we first start going in, it was really scary. But after the last, you know, after
are they going to let me back out?
I was like, this is really scary. But after we start going, it was a joy because we would go in and then, you know, do service on like 30 to 40 people, men and women. And then in 2 weeks, we'd go back and it'd be a different group. 2 weeks go back, it'd be the same group. So we start getting to know these inmates, and I love how Sheriff Lamb says it. You know, you get to know the human side, and they're people. They have feelings. It was just so great. but by removing like ex-gang prison tattoos, that type of affiliation, we were doing neck up and hands down. So when they got out, they weren't judged. They can get a job. And although some of it wasn't completed because either they moved or, you know, COVID hit or whatever, they were just thrilled to be there to say, I'm not that person anymore. And we start removing these tattoos. And what an incredible thing. We can't wait to get back in.
Well, that's great. And as you say, when people are incarcerated, they're paying a debt. And when we can get people out of prison and not have them go back to what they did, and this is part of their identity. So if they have a gang sign on their face or on their neck or on their hands and wherever, and you can remove it, they have a greater chance of not ending up back there because they're not identifying with that group or the trauma that caused them to be there to begin with. So it's a great way of healing. At one point, I remember a story, and I'm not going to tell the story. I want you to tell the story about a veteran that came in and the sadness he had affiliated or associated with his tattoo, and it was a process. Do you remember what story I'm talking about?
He came. No, I'm trying to think of what story that is.
It's a veteran. The tattoo on his arm, I think it was on his arm, and it caused him great pain. I don't remember how it changed. And I think for you at the time, it opened up the fact that not only women survivors, but there were men that had trauma with war or serving. And by removing this, you kind of gave him freedom. And that's all I can remember about the story.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I don't remember.
It's okay.
I really don't. We do so many, but there are many that come in with like white supremacy and like you said, you know, gang affiliation. And once they walk outside those doors, they are supposed to be back in that gang. You know, if they're affiliated with that gang, they're in big trouble if they're not. And so they really need that covered or removed like ASAP when they get out of prison.
So
that's some of it too. It does change their life.
And as you promote this or you go around, there was a time, and I don't know where the world of tattoos is now. I don't know if COVID kind of put a suppression on that, but there was a time when everyone was getting tattoos. And as people get older, are you seeing young people that have made decisions to get tattoos that are now having them removed or?
Oh, a total pattern.
Good.
We get a lot of those back stamps, you know, I mean, totally.
So
yeah, as they're getting older.
As they're getting older and they're maybe getting married or having children and all tattoos aren't bad. And I'm not against tattoos. It's just that I think that there's tasteful and then there's a lot of, what I see, unfortunately, in trafficking, demonic, and you see people getting things tattooed on their face,
lots of face tattoos, yes.
And how does that work? I mean, what is that more difficult process to remove those? Is that what is that about?
It's a little more sensitive. I mean, definitely a little more sensitive area when it's on the face. But how we remove it, like I said, we don't use laser. Inside the jails, we use a device called the light blade. It's just a tiny little device, and it's about the size of a vape pen, and it's got a little light bulb on the end of it. It's kind of super cool. And the guy that invented it actually gave Soul Survivor Inc. the rights to this device. We're the only ones that have it. And then the other way we do it is needling. So it's basically we're needling the tattoo, almost like we're tattooing it with no ink, but we're using a serum. And so, the client goes home and they have to heal for a couple weeks. But that serum basically reminds the ink that it's a foreign body. It does not belong in that skin. And it pushes it up to the surface. And then it comes off. It's really cool. But we can't use that method in the prisons. That wouldn't be good. People walking around with wounds. So that's why we use the light blade inside the jails and prisons.
And if someone is hearing this right now and they want to get a tattoo removed, how did they get in touch with you? Or we're in Southern Arizona. I know you come here, but did they have to come up to Phoenix? And I think if someone wants to do this, they'd be willing to. So how do they get in touch with you or Soul Survivor Inc.?
Yeah, they can go to our website at soul survivor.inc. And there are scholarships, forms to fill out. And we actually do have someone up in Tucson. So we have about 7 technicians in Arizona. So it's just not Phoenix. We have them in Peoria, Mesa, Tempe, Tucson, and then a handful in Phoenix right now.
And so, and when you say scholarship, so if someone is a victim of trafficking or has had some kind of assault, or this the tattoo was some kind of branding, there's a process you go through, and how does that work?
Yes, so there's 2 different scholarships. One is for human trafficking, and then the other one is ex-gang and ex-prison. And we try our best, and I would say 90% of this is always, always free. We don't ever charge the client. When it comes to the ex-gang in prison, the very most that their procedure would cost would be $50. And to do something like this, I mean, minimum is $150 to $200, you know, per session. So they fill it out, and then we look over their paperwork with our board and admin and decide, you know, who's going to be accepted. And for the most part, what we do like to see, and it's not always the case, we like to see that they've been in some program, have graduated a program, or at least have, you know, been in some type of program or some type of something when they get out, you know, or when they're out of the life.
That there's some commitment. That there's some commitment on their part.
Yes.
That they're going to.
And I do.
Go ahead.
Yes, that there's a commitment, because a lot of times we'll have, you know, mom or dad call and say, well, you know, we heard about you and my son's getting out in 2 months. It's like, no, son needs to call, not you. You know, so the son needs to call and say, I'm serious about this. And a lot of times, and jails have come a long ways, they actually have programs inside the jails. And so they're already in this either detox or, you know, reunification to the world type program to be better. So when they graduate graduate the program and they get out of prison, they've already done their program.
Yeah, there are. It's actually part of the reintegration program and to help recidivism. So there is a program.
Yes.
In the Arizona. I know the state jails has it, where it's a way to support them as they reintegrate back into society. And
yes.
I would think that the tattoo thing would be just the final thing, because it really does take away the past. Not what happened, but the reminder that that's what happened. Gina, as you do this, and you say that it seems to be increasing, what would you say the trend of this is going to be in what you're doing? Are you going to continue to be... it sounds like it's a growing business.
It is. I don't plan to never stop doing this until the Lord says otherwise. And so we're just going to continue to grow in states. And, you know, we want to be in every major city in every state, you know, so then that way everyone has somewhere to go. And every day, every week, we're, you know, picking up new affiliates, tattoo artists, estheticians. You know, as you know, Kathleen, sometimes, you know, these... survivors come in and they've got wounds from a jackknife or an actual burn. I've got one girl that's got 62 cigarette burns on her back. There's not a lot I can do about that, but our estheticians can. And so, you know, no, I'll never stop doing this until the Lord says so.
Yeah, and tattoos are one form of scarring, but to your point, there's other scars that happen while being trafficked. It's a very violent business, and it is a criminal enterprise, but it is violent. Everybody that is a victim of domestic violence isn't trafficked, but everyone that's trafficked is a victim of domestic violence.
Yes.
And there are the scars to prove it. And by removing whatever scarring that someone has, really does help the process of healing. Well, I just want to continue to encourage and thank you. I figured out, based on all of the information, we've known each other 9.5 years. So
wow.
this is our 10-year anniversary, and I am,
well, bless us.
Yeah, I am great. There's got to be a glass of champagne or some lunch in our future, but I just thank you, and I thank you for sharing this part of what it is to heal from trafficking, and just love and bless you, and stay warm, and I'm sure we'll see each other soon. This has been Gina Jernukian with Soul Survivor, Inc. And Gina, give us your website one last time, please.
SoulSurvivor.ink. And Soul is SOUL.
Wonderful. This is Kathleen Wynn. You've been listening to Wynn Tucson on 10:30 a.m. The Voice. When we come back, we'll talk to Gina Godbehere, who ran for Maricopa County Attorney, about some new legislation to help protect our kids against suicide. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to this Wednesday edition of Win Tucson. We are on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and today is the day of Gina's. We had Gina Jernukian, now we have Gina Godby here. And I have known Gina also, this Gina, a long time. She recently ran for Maricopa County Attorney. She had been working in the county attorney's office. She was the City of Goodyear prosecutor, and she works on all kinds of issues, legal issues that to change laws, to change policy, and to help our state overall, and has done amazing work. And today I asked her to come on in regards to legislation that is being offered up on how to protect our kids. So, Gina, thank you so much for accepting my invitation, and welcome to Win Tucson this morning and coming on the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we have a new legislature, and I believe it is Joanna Osborne and Katie McPherson, and you are working together collaboratively on some new legislation. Would you explain to the listeners what it's about and what you're hoping to accomplish this session?
Yes, great. I was on a committee that was chaired by Representative Joanna Osborne at the time, and also Representative Grantham, and Katie McPherson was on that team along with representatives across the state. And we were tasked with looking at the unprecedented pressures that have led to bullying, substance abuse, depression, and have contributed to Arizona's alarming high suicide rates. So the legislation that we came up with are the recommendation of the task force after having speakers and reviewing data for about 6 months and looking at all those issues of where we can make improvements in the area of teen mental health.
And for my listeners that don't know, and we talked about this several months ago, but what is happening in Arizona that our suicide rates are so high? Why? And do you remember the statistics or what the numbers are to share?
Yeah, and it's not just in Arizona. In 2021, the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry have declared a national emergency in child and adolescent mental health dealing with soaring suicide rates. But particularly in Arizona, it is the leading cause of death for ages 10 to 14 and ages 15 to 24 in our young adults and our children.
And so, and what was this attributed to? So why do we know the effect or the cause?
No, a lot of times it's a combination. It's a combination of the unprecedented pressures that our kids are facing that have led to bullying, substance abuse, and misuse, and as well as depression are all contributing to it. So when you think like areas of social media, they are inundated with social media 24/7. When we were growing up, we didn't have those pressures that they have today, especially with the bullying over the internet that our young adults are facing. When COVID happened and the lockdowns, there were additional depression and grief from many of our young adults losing loved ones. I know there's a lot of pressure from academic success in our schools. So there's pressures and stressors that we didn't have growing up that our kids are facing in just an unprecedented amounts at this stage.
And you point to the bullying, which I haven't heard about. I know that bullying still goes on. When my kids were growing up in school, I remember that there would always seem to be one group again. They would almost target somebody, and it was really disconcerting. And kids can be mean. They can just be hateful. And it's really sad to see. And when I worked at the Attorney General's office, we had. I had a lot of moms whose children had committed suicide as a result of bullying, and it's something you can't undo. And kids don't, their brains aren't fully formed. They're not making good decisions. So the legislation that's being proposed or your recommendations, can you share some of those so people understand, based on all the information you received, what are you suggesting that we should do?
Well, Well, the biggest issue that we discussed as a group before we came to the proposal was, one, the lack of mental health treatment that's available, especially in our rural communities. And anyone who's ever known somebody that has tried to seek help for their child, when if you are in a crisis mode, there's great resources out there and there's help, but the warning signs are usually right before they hit that moment. And there's not a lot of help out there. If parents wish to get private treatment or go see a doctor, they might find themselves waiting for over 30 days to even get into help. A lot of providers do not accept private insurance. So you're talking about $100 to $200, somewhere in that range, to get an appointment for a doctor to see your child if your child needs help. If you need treatment for substance abuse, and as we know with fentanyl pouring over our borders, this is a real issue that we are facing with, especially from addiction standpoint and hopefully not the overdose standpoint that contributes to everything else. But with all of that happening, there's a lot of access and inability for families to get help, especially in our rural communities. When you look at inpatient treatment, you're talking about $10,000 for a family, and a lot of families do not have that money to be
especially
able to do it.
Especially right now, right?
So we looked at all kinds of options, even from helping families with funding to being able to say, why can't we look into doing a tax write-off? If you could deduct your your eye care, your contacts, and your dental, why can't you deduct a substance abuse treatment for your child? So there's things like that we wanted to look at. There is no community hub. If you have a family in crisis right now, where do they turn to? There's so many available resources and great nonprofits out there that are doing work, sometimes work that would be free that could fill some of those gaps, but nobody knows where to turn to. So we asked for them to establish a community hub of information and support in the following areas: access to care, depression, mental health, bullying and social media, and family support. This community hub, I think, is instrumental, and it is needed in our communities. We also are asking for money to provide funding for school districts and nonprofits to help with mental health first aid training, youth resiliency training, and substance abuse awareness programs. And I think they're getting better with the one in one pill can kill with fentanyl.
Yes.
But we need to have a lot more education out there. We just don't have a lot of education in our schools, and prevention is a key to avoiding some of these tragedies. But those are just a couple of the recommendations that we've made. We also are trying to do digital awareness and marketing campaigns, and we want to make sure every school, especially our rural schools, have this anonymous tip line. If you look at when I started and got involved with Speak Up, Stand Up, it was after there was a murder-suicide at a local high school, and
yes,
that led to my entry into the nonprofit world. But every school tragedy we have out there, there's oftentimes missed warning signs. And so we have to empower our youth to know what to look for with those warning signs. And we have to give them the ability to communicate, even with an anonymous text, that somebody may need help and one of their classmates could be in crisis. And not all schools have the money or the funding to have that. And so we want to make sure that there's that helpline available, resources are connected, so we can try to avoid some of these tragedies.
I agree, and I think sometimes schools, they almost shy away from this because they don't want the stigma, they don't want this to be happening in their school, so they almost try to suppress this kind of communication, when in fact they could go a long way and probably help. It's not always just the one person or somebody who is depressed. There's usually more than one. And if you make this kind of counseling or you make this kind of mental health available, you're probably going to help more than one. You're going to probably help many who don't have the courage to come forward. And we also have to have it be okay in our education settings that our counselors, that our school resource officers are trusted, and that students feel that they have a place to go when they're conflicted, when they're depressed, when they can't cope with what's happening. I really love the idea of resiliency. And I agree with you that the medical care, and especially in rural areas, is difficult to get. And so is there, do you know who's championing the bill in the legislature this session, Gina, by any chance?
I do not. I know that we were meeting with Representative Grantham, so I think that he is still going to be the lead on the legislation. And we have a number of proposals, and I know that he's going to start working with them and trying to get something passed that will deal with these alarming issues that we're facing in Arizona. You know, and it's not just, it's also the long-term benefits, and I hope people realize, especially since I spent my career in the criminal justice system, when I've dealt with so many homicide cases and violent crimes, you can almost pinpoint in the majority, 90% of the cases, trauma in the defendant's background.
Correct.
And it could trace all the way back almost when you see a time when they went right and should have went left. If we could deal with trauma early on, destigmatize mental health so that they can get the help they need and not self-medicate with illegal drugs that usually is a dangerous cocktail that leads these high-risk populations at greater risk to enter our criminal justice system, enter our homeless population, and have issues throughout their life. We're really looking at trying to get there early and save lives now but prevent tragedies down the road.
We're going to take a short break, and we come back. I want to talk to you about what you're doing now and some of the other work that you've done, and ask you a few more questions about your time fighting against crime in this state, because crime is clearly on the rise. And we're talking to Gina Gobby here. We'll be back right after this on mental health and suicide prevention and a bunch of other things. This is Kathleen Wynn with Wynn Tucson on 1030 AM, The Voice. We'll be back right after this. We are talking to Gina Gobby here about the very important issues that are happening in our state and how we can get on the prevention side versus the reaction side. Gina, you've been involved. When you prosecute crimes, you see the worst that there is, and you are a very successful prosecutor. And you also see, when you're working in government, the broken processes. So how do we as citizens support efforts in the legislature or in our communities to fix the gaps that are currently existing? And there seems to be many. We've mentioned the fentanyl. We are clearly the drug highway into this country, us and probably Texas. We've received, they keep seizing it, so we know that that's not stopping. The border being wide open, we've had an increase in sexual predators coming into this country. There's so many aspects. And then as you get down and you're trying to raise a family or get your kids through school, and then you have all the social pressures of social media. So what do we do? Where do we focus so that we can make an impact in our communities? I'll leave that question to you, and you can answer, come at it any way you want.
That's interesting. There's a couple things we could do. One is to voice our concern that we would like to address these issues because, you know, as you know, substance abuse, it doesn't discriminate. It's impacting all families. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not your child, it could be a friend. And when we look at the fact that everything is contributing to suicide from our illegal, a lot of times it's using illegal substances, it's bullying, it all leads to that depression that leads to sometimes even the last couple shootings that we had, they're under the influence of illegal drugs. It's happening in every single case. They've been bullied. They're under the influence of illegal drugs. They're mentally unstable. And some of the worst shootings that have taken place have that same, I guess, formula
right.
with them that are endangering our children. And look at these school shootings. They have to stop. And that's just one aspect of why we need to take this risk seriously with everyone involved. But as what you could do for your own child, understand what the universal warning signs that a child can be in crisis. And that's what we try to teach with Speak Up, Stand Up, Save a Life. And our website is Speak, Stand, Save. You can go and look at what the universal warning signs are. And know that if a child needs help, then you can go and there's free resources on our hub to be able to to be able to access them. But what we could do as parents is talk to our child. A lot of times when we asked our youth why they don't tell a trusted adult that a classmate could be in crisis or whether that they themselves need help, can we empower kids to come forward? And they're reluctant to tell adults. And the reason is that we add drama to the situation.
Yes.
We don't listen. We try to solve the problem. And so one of the things that we try to tell all the adults out there is, remember, you have two ears and one mouth for a reason. You need to listen. And if our children confide in us and talk to us about our classmates, one of their classmates, or an issue that they're seeing, the worst thing that we could do is try to minimize it and not take that risk seriously, because then they're never going to come forward and talk to us again. So we have to kind of earn that respect, have that dialogue with our children, let them know what the dangers are out there. And then from a bigger level is encourage our schools, there's training, and a lot of our schools don't want to bring training to the class because they think that it's dangerous to talk about suicide. And I think that you mentioned that earlier. That's not true. Suicides are happening. The kids are hearing about it on social media. They're hearing about it on the news. So why aren't we talking about it and giving them that that type of treatment that they need at school to be able to deal with issues that are happening in the community? And we need to give them the tools to handle these stresses.
Well, and to the point about suicide, there's actually sites that encourage young people to commit suicide. There's actually... Yeah. Places out there, and if you don't warn them, it's like warning them against being groomed for trafficking. If you don't at least create the awareness, they're vulnerable. Resiliency is a very big thing. I think that we somehow want our kids to not have any adversity, but sometimes a little adversity is a good thing because it teaches them how to deal with it and how to overcome it and how to become independent. Life is not perfect and life is not easy, but there seemed to be so much drive and focus on likes and on people, on being popular and being famous. Most people aren't. And you need to understand as a child that there's a real world that you live in, and that so many of these people online aren't really your friends, aren't. And so when they somehow get disconnected from whatever reality they're living in, we see a huge emotional disconnect and no ability to deal with the depression or the sadness. I want to go back to one of the things you say, how parents had drama. I had a girl who was sexually assaulted by someone who hired her to babysit his kids. And her mom were in the process of moving, and mom was all stressed out about moving. So when she came and I sat down with her and her mom, and mom had finally discovered this had happened, I said, well, why didn't you say something sooner? And her reason was, well, mom was so busy and stressed out about moving, I didn't feel like I could. So we need to be able to tell when something happens in our kids' behavior that changes. She clearly got very quiet, got depressed because something had happened. And we've got to kind of train, I think, parents too to watch for those signs for our kids so we can be more reactive, because if you miss the signs, and I'd like you to say your website a little bit slower. You said it really fast, so go ahead and say that again. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's speakstandsave.com.
speakstandsave.com. Okay, good.
Yes.
And there's lots of great resources on that website to help parents, to help teachers. The Department of Education, we have a new change there. Has anyone talked? I know they're just getting settled in and shutting down certain websites, which I thought was good. But are there other ways to help empower our youth or help empower those that support youth? And can we use the Department of Education to do that in the state?
We can use the Department of Education, the Department of Health, and the Department of Youth, Faith, and Family. So we've asked for all three of those departments to work together. Every department has individual resources. We're trying to gather all those resources in one place or have links that we can connect so that parents know when you go to one that you can have access to all of the resources available across the state. But we want to add the community hub idea is to add all of the nonprofits to that as well, because there are some amazing nonprofits out there that are doing great work that can also give you toolkits. And just for one, all your community coalitions that are dealing with substance abuse right now. So you have great community coalition that have toolkits that schools could use and that can offer free mental health training in schools. But we just have to let the school districts, the teachers, the parents out there know what's available to them. And I'm just going to throw out one other that a lot of people didn't know. I always liked PALS, which is the Parents of Addicted Loved Ones. Mm. It's just a small profit, and they do like free, they were doing free meetings every week over online that parents can go to get assistance and guidance to deal with their children. But most people didn't even know that resource was out there. And that so there's so many amazing nonprofits across our state that we really just have to let help them get their name out there and what services they can provide, so we can help fill some of those gaps. Because we're never, even if there's not enough money that could fill the gaps, because we have a lack of shortage of doctors right now and into that whole medical field to be able to help to make sure that we have enough psychiatrists and to assist all the children. And that's why I think there's such a demand for counseling. That's why a lot of the providers are going cash-based, because they can, because the demand's so high.
Well, and to your point, there is such a demand because of the circumstances. So I love the strategic approach of combining resources at the state level and hopefully then getting communities to hook into that. And I think you mentioned this earlier, but this is not a partisan problem. This is a humanity problem. This is not a Democrat problem. This is not a Republican problem, an independent problem. This is the next generation, and how do we give them the tools and the skills and the resiliency and the courage to live their lives, but to live out their lives? And I think I'm hopeful that everyone can come together as we start to figure out where our baseline is, how many kids are we losing, and how do we reduce those numbers as quickly as possible and bring effective resources. There are a lot of good people doing a lot of good work, and I like the idea of connecting all those into a network so that we can be more effective with the resources and connecting people so they can help and work and empower our youth. And I think that that's ultimately where I know your heart is. And we have a lot of good people doing a lot of good things. I just don't think they know about each other. And I hope that as we go forward right now, that we start to do that inside our state, because we really need to protect our kids. Gina, I want to thank you. Is there anything else you want to add? We have about a minute left. Is there anything else you want people to know? We have speakstandsave.com. But anything else that you're working on that you'd like to share?
No, I would just reiterate one other thing, too. When I walked around and you see all these homeless people, a lot of them are young adults, and we have to get them help. We've tried to lock them up. We've tried to do a pass where you only can have treatment. And I think education and prevention is the key. We have to go back and start getting in our schools and teaching them of the dangers of substance abuse, because right now we're losing this war on drugs, and we are losing our young children. It's killing our children, and we have to take a really progressive approach on that and intervene early on in their lives.
I want to say thank you for coming on, for all the work that you do. You have my, I will continue to cheer you on and keep us posted on what you're doing. You are clearly an asset to Arizona. Gina, God be here. This has been Wynn Tucson. I'm Kathleen Wynn. You've been listening to 10:30 a.m. The Voice, trusted local news and talk. And we will see you tomorrow on Wynn Tucson, or hear me tomorrow. Stay warm, everybody.